I'm Shelby Herbert, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUAC, where I work in Fairbanks, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
It's Outdoor Explorer, and I'm your host, Martha Rosenstein. Since 2018, Lisa Keller has been a host on Outdoor Explorer, sharing the stories of athletes, adventurers, and community leaders. This week, Lisa is in the guest chair as she says goodbye to the show. Lisa's story is rooted right here in Anchorage, from growing up with skis on her feet and trails in her backyard to shaping the way countless Alaskans have experienced sport and the outdoors. Along the way, she's built communities around running, swimming, and triathlon, and she's helped create opportunities for people who have never thought of themselves as athletes. We talk about the lessons she's learned as a coach and a community builder, and her reflections on her time behind the microphone. Keep listening for more on Outdoor Explorer. It's Outdoor Explorer, and I'm your host, Martha Rosenstein. Since 2018, Lisa Keller has been a host on Outdoor Explorer, sharing the stories of athletes, adventurers, and community leaders. This week, Lisa is in the guest chair as she says goodbye to the show. Lisa's story is rooted right here in Anchorage, from growing up with skis on her feet and trails in her backyard to shaping the way countless Alaskans have experienced sport and the outdoors. Along the way, she's built communities around running, swimming, and triathlon, and she's helped create opportunities for people who have never thought of themselves as athletes. We talk about the lessons she's learned as a coach and a community builder, and her reflections on her time behind the microphone.
Welcome to Outdoor Explorer, Lisa.
Oh, thanks, Martha. It's really fun to be on this side. I like not having the stress of being the interviewer. I can just say, you know, free thoughts and to a degree.
Yeah. So first, I just want to say that I'm kind of honored to be doing this interview. But when I sat down to do my outline, I was also kind of completely overwhelmed because, as I said in a text to my girlfriends, how does one even begin to do the great Lisa Keller justice? Over the years, you've been a host on this show, so I think listeners have gotten to know you a little bit and know some of your story. But since you're now a guest on the show, can you tell us a little bit about who you are?
Yeah. And well, I'd like to start off with that you and I have known each other for a long time because at one point in my coaching career, I was coaching cross-country running at track at East High School, which is also my alma mater. And I coached you when you were in high school.
Yep.
And so it's just really thrilling to see you as an adult now and have to share many adventures with you because we've gone and traveled together and done races together. And that's been really fun. So there was no one I would have rather had, sorry, other hosts, but to interview me, but you.
Well, thank you. I am honored.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Anchorage right before the earthquake and grew up in the outdoors. You know, my dad was really the influence here. And, you know, we skied at Arctic Valley and we hiked in the Chugach every summer. And it was just wild in Anchorage at that time. You know, our subdivision, when we first moved into it, it was dirt roads, and now it's like squarely in Midtown, you know. So things have really changed, but also a lot of stuff has changed for the better because there's even more opportunities to recreate outside in this kind of, I call it, wild urban area, you know. So I was an athlete. I was lucky to be one of the first wave of Title IX girls. So there was all the athletic opportunities available to me that were available to my brother. But also because I had a dad who really encouraged me in sports and in academics, just the same as he encouraged my brother. And I was really fortunate to have him. And then I I went outside for college. I went to University of Oregon in Eugene, which is a very, runner heavy school. I had ran in high school, but I actually played soccer there. It wasn't a varsity sport yet at the collegiate level, but it was high level club. And came back to Anchorage and then did a little bit of traveling, lived out of my car for a little while in the late 80s and early 90s, always coming back to Anchorage, and then came back just like, I was living in Telluride, Colorado, actually, and I'm like, I miss Anchorage. I need to go home. And so I came back up in the middle of winter, in it was the January 1993, and then just always knew that this is obviously the place I want to live for the rest of my life. So, and so what I've done over the years, I've had a really diverse career, I guess, no one track. I worked at the Anchorage Community YMCA for many years, so I was immersed in not the nonprofit world from the 80s into the early 2000s. And then that's I kind of launched my coaching, private coaching at that time, actually group private coaching triathletes, swimmers, bikers, runners, coached at the high school level, which was really fun. But you have three clients at the high school level. You don't have one client. So that's the hard thing about coaching at high school. So then I was married and I had two small children. They were 2 and 4, and I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so I survived, obviously. That was like 23 years ago now. And then so I kind of decided it honestly, it was like the last straw on the marriage. That was kind of the end, but I didn't want to go sit in an office or do anything like that. And my degree is in political science, so so I decided I'm really going to make this coaching thing a career. And so that's how I started coaching. And then I kind of just hustled and got just all sometimes a little side work. And then I started an event management business with my friends Greta Yarbrough and Lori Bassett. And we had that through the 2000s into the about 2012, I think, when we wrapped it up. So we timed races and we did all the logistics for races. And that was a lot of fun. It was just really great working with Greta and Lori, and we're all still really good friends to this day. And then about at that time that business was wrapping up, I got involved with Running Free Alaska. So Running Free Alaska had just started. Tim Alderson was an intern in the mental health unit working on his master's degree at Highland Correctional. And so his wife, Lori, said, you really, because he didn't have any experience coaching, he said, you should get a hold of Lisa Keller, and Ellen Brown was the other first coach there. And, she can put together a coaching program. And so that was in 2012. And now I'm the executive director of Running Free Alaska. And we actually have an inside program person now, Halliday Phillips. A lot of people might be familiar with her. Skinny Raven is extremely involved with us and supportive of this program. And our next step is that we are going to open, hopefully within, or well, our goal is mid next year to end of next year to open a transition house. And that house will be based on exercise and outdoor activity, which will be a completely new and different concept of any place that is housing people coming out of incarceration. So we are going to take women who have been in our program inside Highland and have them in our house outside of Highland with all the programming based around that, and help be supportive of jobs, finding jobs, and substance abuse is a major problem. So, working on staying sober. And not smoking too, because that's another piece. So we are right in the middle of purchasing a house right now. We have an angel investor who's going to purchase the house for us. And just coincidentally, it's a house I sort of grew up in because it was 2 doors down from where I grew up. And the guy who's selling it is like a brother to me. So it really is like coming full circle in this community that we're all connected to.
That feels
So that
very classic Anchorage.
it is, isn't it? We are all connected. I've always told my daughters that we're all connected.
So, you talked about your dad, which you interviewed him. He was actually on this show. And you talked about there's a lot that I want to circle back to, obviously,
Yeah.
but you talked about how he raised you and your brother to, appreciate the outdoors, to love sports. What other values from like your parents or your upbringing have stuck with you in the way that you approach both your sport and coaching?
Ooh, that's wow. You're gonna make me is this a therapy session?
No. Maybe.
Yeah. We kind of had this saying, my grandfather, my dad's dad, said, Kellers don't quit. And actually sometimes they do. You need to know when to quit. But that was kind of something that's always stuck in my head. When I was a senior in high school, I was running the 800 for East High, and I had been undefeated all season. And at regions, I ended up in third, and I got into state on a conditional mark because I ran fast enough to get a spot. And my grandparents were here for state because I was graduating at the same time from high school. And so that Kellers don't quit stuck in my head during that. And I came back and I won state. So that was something that kind of stuck with me. I think a lot of it is persistence. My dad was a very he passed away like 2 years ago, and he was a very persistent person who really was honest and valued being honest with his principles. And so that doesn't always work because sometimes you do have to make compromises to to have things move forward. But my dad was a political figure, and he had been commissioner of administration for Hickel, and he'd been on the school board in the late 70s and early 80s. And he was kind of like, he was conservative, kind of people knew him as that, fiscal conservative. But you knew when you talked to him, you were going to get an honest conversation with him. He wasn't going to BS you, you know? So that was when I talk to people now, that was the thing that people remember about him. Like, it's always like, I didn't always agree with your dad, or I rarely agreed with your dad, but he was a straight shooter. I knew always where he was coming from. And I think in that comes over in coaching because you have to tell people things they don't want to hear, you know? And so you have to be very honest and not afraid of the repercussions. And sometimes I have said things in coaching that people have not liked. And a couple times I can remember a couple instances of like people were ready to leave my coaching sphere. But then talking to them later, I would apologize if it came off too harsh because I kind of remember that from my dad. My dad maybe didn't have that filter, to know that, not everybody is going to appreciate this hard, sell on them. So you have to know who you're talking to as well. I guess it's Martha, you coined a term called getting Kellered. And that's definitely something from my dad. And my interpretation of getting Kellered is you end up doing something that you had no intention of doing. Do I have that right? You're nodding your
Absolutely.
head.
Absolutely. And I actually, it's funny that I love that you mentioned that because I was gonna, I wanna, this is a show about you, but I think in order to help illustrate the impact that you have had on just like the world of athletics and outdoors in Anchorage and Alaska and why you're a good coach, I mean, my opinion is probably a little bit biased, but I think that as far as most people know, you are a great coach and I appreciate that about you.
Well,
I
thank you.
am going to just share a quick little bit about the impact that you have had on my athletics career. So obviously you coached me in cross country running. I think I was a junior, no, a sophomore in high school at the time when you first started. You taught me how to swim by I took your beginning swim class. You were my coach through my very first triathlon, my very first ocean swim. You were my coach through my first and only 70.3 triathlon. You're responsible for the only time I've ever biked over 150 miles in 1 week. And you somehow convinced me to run my first 50K.
Yep.
And that is a day that still holds the record for the most vertical feat I've ever done in one day.
Yes.
So that
That's
is,
amazing.
I feel like that in itself is quite a list of accomplishments for you. I mean, I think that, and all of that illustrates very well the concept of getting kellered. You suggest something and suddenly you're like, yeah, that seems like a great idea. I don't know.
I mean, I think that's what I've always done, and that's all with my dad too. It's like you just don't take no for an answer. You know, if you want to get something done, you just go for it and you just do it and you find a way, you know. And sometimes that's hard, especially if you're having to operate in a bureaucracy, you know. But there's always a way to make things happen. And I can't count the number of times people have said to me, "Oh, well, no, that can't happen." And I'm just like, "Well, why not?" You know, yeah, it can happen. You can make it happen, you know. So, yeah, I'm glad I'm in your head, Martha.
Always, it's kind of scary. One of the other things that I really appreciate about your coaching is that it's built kind of around your own love of the sport and just like getting out and doing the thing. And with Multisport Training of Alaska, your coaching business, you've kind of created this gateway for people to discover, to both discover and improve their skills in triathlon and running and swimming. When you started that business, did you have a vision for building community, or were you just like, I want to be a coach?
Well, no, I think I did have a vision for building community. I've always preferred coaching groups over coaching individuals. There is just something about doing hard stuff with other people, and that just makes you connected to those people. And you see that at Highland Prison. You know, when Tim started the program, he did a WHO, the World Health Organization. They have a survey on the health of your community, so they look at physical, emotional, social, and environmental health, and they have a scale. And of course, physical health, when you're training for a race, because the women were training, the first cohort of women there were training for a 5K. It was a 12-week program. And, you know, of course, physical health, people automatically, of course, you're going to have better physical health if you have consistent training over 12 weeks. You know, that was kind of a no-brainer. But the other three pieces were really amazing. So, of course, emotional health, there were, you know, and exercise is not a replacement for medication or therapy for everybody. And for most people, probably not. But there are people who maybe are on the, and I'm not a doctor, on the mild depressive or anxiety scale that really are able to kind of control symptoms or feel better when they're exercising. So emotional, yeah, pe most people can kind of connect and go, yeah, I can see how that's going to help emotional health. And also we know that there's endorphins that are released and all of those things. So then the two other, the social and the environmental. So the social health of the women who were in that program at Highland improved dramatically, including social health between themselves and other women in the program. They had better connections because it really is about connecting to people. And in the field of substance abuse, this is something that's really looked at, that substance abuse is often about isolation. You're isolating yourself even more. You're not connected. But also, they had better social connections to the correctional officers. And that was amazing. And it went both ways. It was like the correctional officers had all of a sudden had respect for these women who were doing hard things, you know. And the women had more respect for the correctional officers because the correctional officers were helping facilitate this and were talking to them about the running and things like that. And then maybe the most surprising or outlying one would be environmental. They actually saw their environment as being a more welcoming, pleasing place. And believe me, it doesn't matter what kind of prison you're in. Prison is prison, you know, and it's usually gray and there aren't colors and everything. But the women were getting outside. They were outside in the yard which the Highland Prison is beautiful. It's got these big mountains. You're looking up that Eagle River Valley. It's just gorgeous. So they were appreciating being outdoors. They were just seeing everything in a different light. So I just think the connection part of coaching is like way more important than the actual doing of any of the exercise, you know?
Yeah. What has surprised you? And I want to circle back in a little bit to some more about the Running Free Alaska athletes. But it sort of as a whole, what do you think has surprised you the most about the athletes that you've coached in your like group coaching?
Well, what you mean
Just in
anybody?
general, yeah.
Yeah.
Like
Well,
something that you, when you look back at your coaching, you're like, oh man, when I started, I had this like vision of this is how this was gonna go, and these athletes surprised me through this doing this thing or because of this characteristic or the way this evolved.
I think, and you kind of are part of this, but people who have come into the pool who have never swam before, and or maybe they kind of learned how to swim. And there's somebody, not you, that I'm thinking of specifically, who's a friend. And when she first came in and started swimming, she was literally swimming three or four strokes, standing up, breathing, swimming three or four strokes, standing up, breathing, and over and over and over again. And you know what? She just stuck with it. And that's a big thing. You can't give up on it. You have to keep going. Swimming is probably the hardest thing to learn as an adult. Maybe Nordic skate skiing might be second, you know, of the
Yeah.
things that we do. We're not going out and doing gymnastics and stuff as
Right.
adults, you know. it is a really, really difficult sport to learn. We're moving our body, whereas we're used to moving opposing arm and leg, like when we're running or walking, we're moving now side to side, and that is really different. Plus, you're dealing with the medium of water, which just, you know, we're land beings. We're not living in the water all the time. So you have to learn the feel of the water and how your body moves through the water, and how can I make my body move so that I'm going to go forward and not backwards. And
Yeah.
that's always kind of one of the surprising things. And this is more of a guy problem than a woman problem, because we're more driven from our hips than men are. But so many men on kickboards. So if you're a man and you're on a kickboard and you're trying to kick and you're going backwards, you are not alone. This happens. Many, many men go backwards. In fact, Martha, your first coach, Harry Johnson, was a classic example. Amazing Ironman athlete. Got him on a kickboard, he went backwards. So it does happen. But this person, she just stuck at it. And you know, eventually she ended up doing Lava Man, swimming in the ocean, you know, and I think, yeah, she did Victoria 70.3. So she's done 70.3, which is a 1.2 mile swim. Lava Man is a 1500 meter swim, but the ocean and open water swimming is just so different than a pool swim. And I remember in particular one Lava Man where the conditions were just really, really, really bad, and people were being pulled out of the water left and right, and she just kept moving forward, and she got out of the water and she continued on her race. So that is probably the most thrilling thing to see as a coach, is somebody who comes in, can't swim or can barely swim, and they get to the point where they're doing an open water triathlon. I love it.
That's yeah, I have also had that progression, and it's again one of those things where you start swimming and you're like, oh man, I'll never swim in the ocean or I'll never swim a mile, and then suddenly you think it's a great idea and
Yeah.
you've done it multiple times.
Yep.
The also when I think about coaching your coaching groups, Friday night swim group was kind of like social hour as much as it was a workout. And
Totally.
especially I think especially well swimming and run groups, you know, it's a really supportive environment, no matter of like someone's speed or athletic aspirations. And I think that that is also something that is, I think that's becoming more common in coaching. But do you feel like that's sort of like an evolution that happened? You know, you're like, I don't know, I'm not a coach, so I don't know what it's like when you sit down and think about coaching people. It's like I'm going to coach people to win and be fast, but really, it's more about doing the thing and having fun doing the thing.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there has been an evolution. You know, it's been over 20 years since I started my swim groups, and definitely there were very few. Well, there's kind of a difference of master swim and what I was doing. I was doing something brand new. So a master swim group is, the coach is a US master swim certified coach. You're coaching all four strokes. A lot of times those groups are heavily populated by people who swam competitively in high school and college and or college. And so it can be super intimidating for a beginner. And also you coach a master swim group differently because you're coaching them, at least it used to be, most of the time to a swim meet. You're going to go swim at a regional or a national swim meet. Well, triathlon, you're only doing freestyle. So that was the first thing I started doing, which I don't think was happening at the time, is that I was the first person to just, this is a freestyle group. It's for triathletes, and fitness swimmers. If you don't want to swim the other three strokes, it's for fitness swimmers too, which I have quite a few fitness swimmers. And that was definitely different. So I started getting people who were new to triathlon and their swimming wasn't necessarily very strong, or like you really hadn't swam at all. You needed to learn to swim. And so my groups definitely are more towards that novice to intermediate swimmer. With it, I have a few speedsters in a few of my groups, but they're the outliers for sure. And in most master swim groups, I think it's the other way around. The outliers are the people who are new to swimming because it is somewhat intimidating, especially if you have to learn not just one stroke, but four strokes.
Kind of pivoting on that. So, talking about focus on not the focus not being on speed or winning. I've noticed that, like in my own journey as an athlete, that like my definition of success in sport has kind of shifted over time, and I think that that's happening more on a global level too. A lot of that change, honestly, comes from just participating in groups with other athletes who are just in it for the fun. So success isn't always about winning or being the fastest or even being my fastest. How has your definition of sport, de how's your definition of success in sport evolved? And how do you encourage the people that you coach to think about that success in ways that go beyond times and finish lines?
So that is a really, really good question. And I hate that trope of, oh, that's a really, really good question. But that is a really, really good question because I've definitely changed. So I started in triathlon in 1984. And then I'd been, and I came from a running background. I didn't come from a swim background, which is the irony of now, most of my coaching is in swimming. But I did learn to swim at the spa. It's no longer there. The old time people remember the spa. It was a pool that was across from Valley of the Moon Park. It was the first pool in Anchorage. And so I, for most of my life, because as a triathlete, you can be pretty competitive overall, even. I think when I was 50, I finished in the top. The year I was 50, I finished in the top five of the Gold Nugget Triathlon. And that has always traditionally what has been what's driven me. I like to win races or do really well. I mean, I don't expect to win every time, but I do have to say that has changed, especially as I've gotten much older and your body is just different. And so I'm 61 now, and things just, you don't recover as well. You're achy in places. And it is very, very different now. And then, like many people, COVID just took it all out of me. I didn't exercise for a couple of years in there. I mean, me, who's done it my whole life, and even now, because I've been consumed with some different projects over the last 2 years, I'm just now starting to get back into exercising on a regular basis again. And by that, I mean I swim, I run, I bike, and I also lift because lifting is super important, which is something that I've done since high school. I was really lucky at East High School to have Coach Pete, who encouraged girls in the late. Or not in the late 70s. I was there in the late 70s, but in the 70s, he was encouraging girls to take his weight training class. I mean, he believed in it. He was way ahead of his time. And So now, even though I had told you earlier, I've signed up for Lava Man. I haven't done it since 2019, which is the big race in Hawaii. I did a story about it, actually, somewhere there in the archives. And I have signed up for it, and of course, I want to do well in my age group, which always motivates me to train. And so that is important for me, is just to have a goal out there to be motivated to train. For me, it's I want to do well, but if I don't do well, I've done it. I've done all that training, I've kept myself healthy. But for most people, it's just the finishing. People don't care where they are in their age group or anything. There's very few people who care about that. So if you're considering doing something like a Lava Man or something, do not worry about people like me. Go out there, train, enjoy it. Remember, a huge part of this is the social part. And it's really heartbreaking to hear that so many Ironman triathletes, they have a really high divorce rate. And that's because they're just very singularly focused without being in a group. And if you're going to do an Ironman, do it with a friend at least, so you have that social part of it. Because, like I said earlier, I think the social part of all of this is as important as the actual fitness part of it.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer, and I'm your host, Martha Rosenstein. I'm talking to Lisa Keller about her role as a coach and a community builder as her time as a host on Outdoor Explorer comes to an end.
Let's pivot to talking a little bit more about Running Free Alaska. You talked a little bit about how you got involved in that program, but can you just give us a little bit more background on what it is and kind of where you're going in with that new project?
Yeah. Well, again, I really want to give credit to Tim Alderson for starting the program. Before I heard he had started it, like 10 years before that, I had thought, oh God, it'd be so cool if there was like some sort of program to train women in Highland so that when they got out, they could get into the community. Again, the running community, the triathlon community, they could find a place to find people like them who enjoy doing exercise and not go back to the old friends, because that's a big important part of coming out of prison is you cannot hook up with the people you're hanging out with before, unless they're sober and doing the same healthy things that you're doing, of course. So once Tim did that study for his master's, we kept the program going. So we incorporated as a 501c3, and I was on the initial board of directors, and it was kind of like, it was like a lot of women who were involved in the running scene. Kept this going. And then Tim was part of it for about a year or two, but then he was going into clinical practice. So then I kind of took over as the lead, and we established a schedule. So we have two sessions every year. We have a January through May session. And at the end of that, there's a 5K and a 10K race. And then we have a fall session, which is just about I think our race is going to be October 9th. So a few days after this airs. And that's usually a 5K, a 10K and a half marathon. We have had a woman inside who has run a half marathon in 1:44, which is she would do well at any community race,
Yeah.
Yeah. So and she ran her 5K best time, I think, was 20:07. Maybe it might have been 21:07. So when, there's some talent in there, definitely, but there's also women in there who just want to come out and be part of that community. And it's a healthy community. And they really, really value the program because it is trying to build community and give women a chance to be outside, because that has been restricted since COVID. They're not able to go out onto the track, into the yard by themselves anymore. They used to be able to do that. So it's one of the few exercise outlets that they really have. So we generally have each session, we usually get like around 120 women signing up, but that doesn't mean that, by the end, there's 20 to 40. So sometimes it's just like, oh, my friend is going to sign up for this. I'm going to go sign up, even though I'm going to be walking out the door in a week, but it's been particularly, I think, healthy for the people who are in there the women who are in there for a long time, who essentially have, almost life sentences or life sentences. It's really inspiring to go in there and work with people who still have hope, even though, it can be kind of a hopeless place if you let it. But I think running and the community it builds inside there really contributes to having hope and feeling good about yourself, even if you've made the best choices in your life and maybe really hurt people. But people are complicated, and that's what I really believe, that yeah, you might have done something that is hard to imagine, but you also have these other good qualities about you. And anybody who tries something new and does something hard, I'm gonna, say, hey, you got it going if you do those two things. I really admire that in people.
Well, and I also think that running is a great tool for self-reflection because you spend a lot of time, even though there's a great community built
Yes.
around it and you can do it with other people, if depending on what you're doing, you often spend a lot of time alone with your own thoughts. You can try to distract them with whatever music or
Yes.
whatever, but you spend a lot of time with yourself. And I think that also I can that it definitely fits into why it can be so life-changing for women who are incarcerated, and just that opportunity to sort of grow as a person and reflect on who you are and what is important to you.
That is such a great point. I almost forgot about it because I was like thinking about all the social parts of it. But some of your best reflection and problem solving and creative ideas happen when you're alone running.
And I would imagine that as in a place like a prison, you don't get a lot of time alone. So, when you're running, even if you're running with other people, potentially you are also still have that sort of solitary time to reflect and be by yourself, even though you are in the presence of other people, because you are all distracted by running.
Yes, exactly.
How has that work with Running Free Alaska changed the way, like changed you as a coach? Like, what has that changed in the way that you approach coaching or how you see yourself as a coach?
I think I've become a lot more flexible, and I gotta think about the right word, like accepting maybe of people who really, really struggle with something like running or swimming. More people, I think, struggle with swimming because it's just hard technically. But running can be really, really difficult for some people. And everybody, it's a curve of where everybody falls on that naturally. But yeah, it can be really, really hard. And I think I've become a lot more kind to people around that, and just meeting people where they're at. And I know, like, early on in Running Free, we really, it's so tough there because it's a different population. Like the population I have here pays me to come and, coach them. And the population there does not pay me. I'm just there accepting whoever comes, Yeah, they've really taught me that, to kind of slow down and go, okay, well, maybe I need to do something a little bit different here and not be like so hard on somebody. I don't think I was ever a super hard coach like that. Like, I never yelled at people or anything. I'm not a yeller, and I don't like that kind of coaching.
You just like that, like slow dig of, I'm gonna suggest this thing that's really that sounds really great, but is actually really hard and is gonna make you cry. I'm thinking of a couple of swimming workouts that
Maybe it's
are
that look I give too. Maybe it's the
yeah
look.
Well, yeah, and when you get the like smirk that it's going to be, oh, this is going to be fun, we know it's over.
Yeah. And I always say, I wouldn't make you do something that I
Yeah,
wouldn't
exactly.
do. But yeah, I think, yeah, they definitely have changed me in a lot of ways. And it's really heartbreaking to see sometimes people, you know, if you're looking at social media or if you're looking at Nextdoor is another great example of, you know, how people sometimes are dehumanized if they've been in the criminal justice system or if they're homeless, which like most people who are homeless have had experience in the criminal justice system, you know, they're connected. And it's just not simple and people are complicated. And it is like you do have to come and same with all coaching, you have to kind of meet the person where they're at, you know. That doesn't mean you don't push them to try to, you know, move forward. But you have to find the right way to push each individual forward. You can't just groupthink it and have the same response to everybody.
You talked about your the big project that you have coming up with the transitional house. Do you want to just tell us a little bit more about that project? And like I know there's a race, the Running Free 5K? Is it a
4
5K?
miler. It's
Oh, four
this
miler, that's
weekend,
right.
but we, yeah, it's
Oh,
this weekend, but we are, so
okay.
this is going
We're
to
gonna
air
miss that. Yeah.
afterwards. Yeah. But we are
But yeah,
having a
so
fundraiser in October. So
okay. Yeah, tell us just tell us a little
runningfreealaska.com.
tell us a little bit more about that project.
Yeah. So I had this idea for a while and, the idea was, you know, 'cause, most transition houses, in Alaska or in Anchorage, have a very strong, their programming is around, religion. And that's fine. That works for a lot of people, you know. It doesn't work for everybody. You do kind of see that there is a need for some other kind of programming. So, the idea I'd been thinking about for a long time and talked to people who know about this kind of stuff for a while was that we would have a transition house that was built around exercise and outdoor activity. She's been on Outdoor Explorer before. Heather Caldwell has this. Did you interview her? Did you interview
I did.
Heather?
Yeah, I know her. We actually did. I know her through doing the Klondike Road Relay
Oh, okay. Yeah.
a while ago.
She has this great running therapy program. And because you know, one of the things is when you're doing group therapy and when you're running, anybody who runs with a group knows you can say things that you would never say to anybody else. And part of this theory is it's the same theory as like having your kid in the back seat when you're talking to them, taking them home from school, is you're not making direct eye contact. Like you're next to each other, but you're not looking at each other. So it's easier to say things, you know? So I've been, in fact, I just had lunch with her a couple of days ago to update her on what we're doing. So that would be the kind of thing that would, the kind of program we would have in this house. But this house would also have a fairly good sized gym, you know, a couple treadmills, some bikes, place to do yoga. And then we would, and some weights. And then so they could work out at home, or we would also have this programming around it. Part of the vision is to also, if you look at a lot of transition houses, they kind of look kind of shabby on the outside. And the idea is like, we're going to take care of this and be part of this neighborhood, you know? So there would be some gardening. And this particular house that we have is the woman who owned it, Sandra, who was like another mother to me, she was a big gardener. So the property has not been used for a long time, and so I'm really looking forward to getting that cleaned up and getting her gardens going again. That would be part of the programming inside the house, and we do all the other traditional things. You know, we'll help with jobs and help with other stuff. It's the idea is to give women when they come out of Highland a place to land. Or potentially we'd even take somebody who maybe is already outside of Highland, but is struggling to find a place and bring them in, give them a place, get them stabilized for 6 months, 12 months. But again, we're going to be flexible on that. We wouldn't kick somebody out the door right away if they're not ready. And I think it's, you know, it's part of dealing with the homelessness problem. It's part of knowing that probably 95% of the people who are incarcerated are eventually going to be out. And, if all you've ever experienced inside being incarcerated or once you come out is rejection and hate towards you, and not having anything ever that was nice, which is amazing about our program is some of these women have never had a new pair of running shoes, then how are you going to act when you get out? You're not part of the community. So that's really continuing the community outside of Highland and helping make that transition easier.
Shifting gears a little bit again to talk about your being named YWCA, a woman of achievement. So this recognition was not just for coaching, but for your leadership and your vision in our community. What does it mean to you? And yeah, what does that mean to you?
Well, it's quite an honor. So I'm really thrilled by it. I was actually on the founding board of the YWCA of Anchorage. Sharon Richards founded it back in the late 80s. I was like 23 years old. I had no idea what I was doing, but I really am indebted to her for that opportunity to become involved as a board member at that young of an age. Because I think everybody should be a board member, I mean, it's really important stuff to be part of your community. So I think for me, it's just a recognition that sports and exercise and outdoor activity are powerful things, and they don't get recognized enough in our culture as something that makes this a better world. It makes you a better person. It brings people together. And I think that's why I was recognized for it, because that's always been my goal, is to bring people together through this. And, the YWCA mission, there's a I'm probably not going to get this verbatim, but it's like eliminating racism, empowering women, and then there's like a peace and justice for all component, I think, which I think the work I've done really encompasses all three of those things. Definitely my kind of maybe thing that people see the most is the empowering women part of it. Even though my groups are open to men and women, I have mostly women. And I think sports for women can be particularly powerful, like being able to operate in your body and use your body in a powerful way and take up space. In our world is very important for women.
Yeah, and I think a lot of what you've done is also something that's sort of been like a thread in a lot of what I've talked about on the episodes of Outdoor Explorer that I've done is like being a beginner. And I feel like a lot of what you've done is allowed people who are beginners to have that point of connection and point of entry into things that maybe otherwise they don't know how to start with. And women
Yes.
especially, I think it's especially intimidating for women to be beginners in typically male-dominated areas. Just by virtue of the way things are in society. And I think so I think that that is also a very powerful piece of how you've sort of structured all of the things that you've done.
Yeah, it's really amazing in swimming in particular, but also you hear this in running. And I've never heard this from a man. I've only heard it from women, is that they don't want to take up somebody else's space who might need this. And it's like, well, you need it. Go, you deserve that space, take it. Or I might hold the group up. I don't want to hold the group up. It's like, no, you won't hold the group up because I can accommodate whatever, and I
Yeah.
will make sure that, everybody gets the workout they need to get.
And I think that also, like, and I'm going to use this anecdote as an example, as a personal anecdote of something that we've done together, but I think you reflect that in your not only in your professional life, but in your personal life too, because that 50K that we did, you and me and another friend of ours, we trained for that together, and you are way faster than me, and you didn't care. You were just like, whatever, I'm gonna run ahead, I'll come back. Like, doesn't matter. I'm just glad we're all out here doing the thing. I want to do the thing together. It doesn't matter. I don't care how slow you are, I don't care how fast you are. And
Exactly.
that's actually something that I've carried forward into, interacting with other people in the outdoor space and, running specifically, but just like it doesn't, I can always go slower and I can't go faster. So I can't help you with that. But people are always afraid to, women especially, to slow you down. And my philosophy has kind of become, I don't care. I'd rather be out there doing the thing and doing the thing with somebody who also wants to be doing the thing than have any concern about how fast or slow we are doing the thing.
Exactly. You know, all my memories of you get those Facebook memories or whatever from when we were training in the fall. Like, what was that? That was like 8 years ago or something, I think.
2017.
So those have all been coming up because this was the time we were in, you, me, and Val. That was such a fun time. We had really fun runs.
And as much as that race was hard, it was also very fun.
Yes, it was.
So, also, of course, listeners to the show know you for your voice on this program. And as we said, this is your last show with us. So, can you tell us what it has meant to you to just be able to share the stories and expertise of others here on Outdoor Explorer? And what do you hope people take away from the conversations you've had on this show?
Well, it's actually been just an amazing experience, and I'm so glad I had the. I guess I have to thank Charles Woolforth for this because he's the one who recruited me to be one of the hosts when he left. And part of it, as you know, is just finding interesting stories. You know, you have to get out there and you have to reach out to people, and people. You know, both you and I have. Interviewed people who are nationally known, and just it's amazing you can reach out to somebody and they'll get back to you and they'll like, yeah, sure, I'll do an interview with somebody in Alaska. So that has been a really amazing part, and just to learn all of these different stories. I've really appreciated just being able to live vicariously through some people. And I mean, I think an example of that is all the Chugach link up stories I did. I think I did three different ones, maybe four, I can't remember. But so there was the one summer, I think it was 2019, right before COVID, when all these records were being broken. And you and I think had talked about the Chugach link up and just the fantasy of doing this, putting these 12 peaks together, now 13 peaks that are over 5,000 feet in the Front Range of the Chugach. And it was really amazing that summer too because of the women who were doing it. So the first women to complete it without a man with them, Julianne Dickerson, Abby John, and April McCanley. I interviewed them, and that was just, amazing to hear about their friendship on the trail because the three of them did it together. And also this a kind of story that was also running with Sophia Tiddler, who was doing it solo. And it was kind of this race of who's going to do it first. They both kind of knew of each other, and the three women got it first. And then Sophia, or Sophie, she goes by either. She then did it later solo. So she was the first solo woman. And then she also did it, I think it was a year and a half later, on winter solstice.
That's the one that I remember the most because it was just such a harrowing story.
Yes, it took her almost 60 hours. And, she had to use crampons and ice axe and very little light. It was mostly in the dark. And that was just crazy. So I really have had thought about doing the Chugach link up. And then I'm like, you start to listen to these stories and you're like, oh my God, it takes a lot of time. Because they're out scouting. Like, the year before, they're scouting, trying to figure out how to put it all together. And then just the training leading up to it and getting the right weather window. And it's pretty amazing. And my hat's off to the people who have done the Chugach link up. So that was one of my fantasy stories for sure.
Do you have any other favorite shows that you want to call out? You've done some pretty great shows in the past.
I have this list here I'm looking at right now. And I know we're getting down near the end of our time here together, but I did want to give the shows, the people I interviewed the most. So I think that when I look at it, Keegan Randall, who I coached her in high school too, and who I think I first interviewed her right after she got her cancer diagnosis, and I'd had breast cancer too. So And so Keegan and then Lael Wilcox, so another East High grad. And
I'm
I've
noticing
interviewed.
it. I'm noticing a theme here.
Yes, I know, East High. So I really interviewed, liked going back and checking in with them, you know. And then Keegan, of course, once she became the Nordic Ski Association executive director, it was always fun to chat with her. But Lael lives in Tucson, which is where my daughter lives, so that was always kind of fun too. Max Romy, I interviewed him quite a few times. He's the outdoor watercolor artist, and he's done a lot of work on the Long Trail, which I did quite a few stories on the Long Trail. I really enjoyed that, the fantasy of the Long Trail too. Hopefully it's not a fantasy. I shouldn't say that. It's going to happen.
It will.
My last interview was Jeff Lowenfels, and I had interviewed him twice before that. So he is a fun interview because he's just a personality. He's easy to talk to, but you can have a conversation with him. So that was really fun. The person who I though will miss the most, and somebody's going to have to pick this up. So Martha, looking at you, is Harlow Robinson. Every year, once a year, I checked in with him on the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. And we would talk about all the inductees and the directors' awards, and it was just he and I would like talk for an hour and a half. But we just really enjoyed chatting about that, and it was a lot of fun. Favorite interview, and the one that's going to surprise probably everybody, it is a policy interview, and it was on outdoor recreation areas, specifically the Stuart Trail. It was a two-part, but the part that was my favorite interview was with Jeff Landfield and Paxson Wolbert of the Alaska Landmine. And we had so much fun in that interview talking. And then we talked. So the interview went long, and I think I cut it. I quit recording, but we talked for another hour and a half after that. And
Gosh,
it
yeah.
was just, they're both a great interview. They had done so much work to get the Stuart Trail open, which I think is now there's more problems springing up with it again. But it was just an easy, fun interview. And so that really kind of goes down as one of my top interview. I love all of my people I interviewed, of course, but that one was especially fun and memorable.
That's all for today's show. Thank you to my guest, Lisa Keller. You can find more information about our guests and this show on the Outdoor Explorer page at alaskapublic.org. Thank you to our producer, Tobin Shelby, and Ammon Swenson for his additional support. And from all of the hosts here at Outdoor Explorer, thank you for listening, and we'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.